Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA, irishradio.com worldwide. I'm delighted to welcome Charlie Flanagan, TD, and he is Fine Gael representative for the counties of Laois and Offaly. He served as Minister for Children and Youth Affairs, Minister for Foreign Affairs and Trade, and Minister for Justice and Equality, and of course now he's chairman of the Oireachtas Joint Committee in Foreign Affairs and leading a delegation here. Minister, you are indeed very welcome to the program.
Thank you indeed, Adrian. It's always good to talk, and it's my first time in New York City since before COVID, and I just want to say that it's great to be back on your show, and I want to offer at the outset my sincere personal congratulations to you, and indeed the congratulations of Dáil and Seanad Éireann on your great appointment by the President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins, as an awardee of the President's Distinguished Persons for your service. I haven't been talking to you since, so I wish to offer you my congratulations and wish you continued success and good health.
Well, thank you, Minister. I must say, I don't think there's a higher award anywhere, and I really was chuffed and appreciated. When I ask you, first of all, I'm trying to figure out about 35-year career in politics in Ireland, and you know, I just mentioned a couple of the ministerial positions that you've held, senior indeed. But leading the delegation of the Oireachtas Committee, the Joint Committee on Foreign Affairs, on this trip, you've visited and had appointments in Washington and now in New York. Also, but especially delegation visiting the United Nations here in New York. What was the primary purpose of the visit to the UN?
Yeah, well, Ireland, of course, again, since last we spoke, has become a member of the United Nations Security Council. All Irish people are particularly proud of the role that Ireland plays on that body in the UN. If you go into any school in Ireland, you will see photographs and posters of Ireland's United Nations membership and our blue berets. It will be an opportunity for a parliamentary delegation to see firsthand the work that Ireland does at the UN, whether it's development aid, whether it's part of the World Food Programme, whether it's work in terms of peacekeeping. And I'm very pleased to see Ireland in a prominent position under our UN Permanent Representative Geraldine Bernaysen and her team. So a full day at the United Nations, and also a full day and indeed more visiting the Irish centres here in New York, the New York Irish Centre in Long Island and the Emerald Isle Centre. COVID was a very difficult time. I know it was here in New York, it also was at home, but it resulted in something of a disconnection where many people who wished to travel to New York to see their relatives, to see their family, couldn't. Similarly, the two-way street, being the people who were in New York, many of them couldn't go home. And we didn't have the parliamentary or governmental contact, as you will recall, when Leo Varadkar made the announcement from New York City in March 2020 that we would be going into lockdown. So this is the first visit of a parliamentary delegation. Myself as chairman, my colleague Deputy John Brady from Wicklow, represents the Sinn Féin Party, and my colleague Senator Dermot Wilson from Cavan, who is no stranger to New York. So a cross-party group making connection with the Irish community here in New York. I'm very pleased and proud to do so.
I'd like to mention, though, that whereas the desperate situation, you know, which led to shutdown for travel for pretty much on both sides of the Atlantic, that the Irish government did not forget that, in fact, the Irish centres throughout the United States indeed still needed the funding to keep going, because to say that they were as busy as ever wouldn't cover the half of it. You are no stranger indeed, and in many of your ministerial positions have always highlighted the diaspora and the needs of the Irish diaspora. So it's and we would like to acknowledge that and thank you for that. I'd also, though, like to talk a little bit, you know, about Ireland today, and in particular, you know, during your tenure as Minister for Foreign Affairs and Trade, you know, you represented the Irish government in the talks process, you know, leading up to the Stormont House Agreement in 2014 and the first start in 2015. And you co-convened with the Prime Minister, the Taoiseach, the All-Ireland Civic Dialogue on Brexit, you know, and played the senior role indeed in advancing Ireland's strategic interests leading up to the triggering of Article 50. Now, we have a very a confusing understanding of, you know, where Brexit is at right now. And, of course, bad news travels much faster. But in your estimation, Minister, is Brexit, and you being involved in the lead-up to it, is Brexit at a standstill? Is it in limbo? How do you see a resolution on the protocol issue or others?
Well, as you know, Adrian, Brexit was a shock to the Irish people. We didn't want it. We didn't want to see our neighbours leave the European Union after being partners with us in that peace body since the early 1970s. However, we could expect that the British people in a referendum decided to leave the European Union. I don't believe there was sufficient planning, and we still see the difficulties or the consequences of inadequate planning on the part of the British government. The situation in Northern Ireland, for example, as you will know from interviewing politicians from all persuasions over decades and from your own intimate knowledge of politics and society on the island of Ireland, it's very fragile. So our objective was to ensure that the gains made by the Good Friday Agreement in that historic treaty of 1998 were fully protected on Brexit, and that meant an invisible border. And we unfortunately have some unfinished business as far as the adherence of our neighbours in Britain to aspects of the withdrawal agreement. There was the special Northern Ireland Protocol, which preserved the single market for Northern Ireland, providing indeed great opportunities for economic commerce and trade, but it also ensured that we would not see the return of a hard border on the island of Ireland, resulting as that would in the type of tensions that nobody wants. However, it seems now that the British government are not particularly happy with an agreement that was designed by them, signed by them, approved by their parliament, and, you know, should now be in force. And we would, as active members of the European Union, we would encourage our neighbours in the British government to sit down with the European Union and sort out the challenges that remain as far as the implementation of the protocol is concerned. European Union has been good for Ireland. European Union as a family has always been ready to work with partners, and it's still ready and willing to work with the United Kingdom, finding solutions to difficulties. But from our perspective, the Good Friday Agreement cannot in any way be adversely impacted upon, cannot be any way interfered with. And the Northern Ireland Protocol, which is now the subject matter of considerable debate, will not be renegotiated. It will not be on the table for further negotiation. And our concern is the British government have now indicated that they will proceed to abandon it in a unilateral way. And we say that is not the way to do business. The way to do business is to sit down around the table, and if there are practical difficulties, see how best they can be resolved. So there isn't any need for the type of tension that's now appearing as far as the Good Friday Agreement is concerned, and as far as Brexit is concerned. And I was very pleased in Washington, along with my colleagues, to meet a number of congressmen and women from both sides of the aisle, both Democrat and Republican, who robustly and steadfastly have supported Ireland over a long number of years, as indeed have successful presidential administrations, including, of course, President Biden. So we acknowledge the support of the United States. In fact, Adrian, I would go as far as to say that the Good Friday Agreement would not have been completed in 1998, that agreement would not have been reached in the peace process without the great help and support that we received from America. And that support was forthcoming in the 80s, in the 90s, in the 2000s. As you said, long around the time of the Stormont House Agreement, when I myself served as Minister for Foreign Affairs, and now into the 20s. And we're very pleased to have the support of the Biden administration and many across both sides of the aisle in the House, as I've said, in particular, that great friend of Ireland, Richie Neal, who is leading a delegation to Dublin next week. And I look forward to meeting him. So the support of the United States is both robust and steadfast. And we, as Irish parliamentarians, very, very much appreciate that help, support and assistance and goodwill.
Yes, and you know, it's not only support, but this is support with clout. You know, the president, Joe Biden, and again, you know, the delegation heading for Ireland, and many down the line, are aware of the commitment of the United States, the tie-in between, you know, trade agreements, and adherence to, you know, the Good Friday Belfast Agreement. There's nothing up for discussion there either. So it's confusing to us to know how, you know, Great Britain would, at this point, not understand that there is a tie there, and the tie with the United States is such that...
Yes. Yeah. And our tie with the United States, you know, comprises the fact that there are 33 million people across the United States of America who claim Irish ancestry. There is not a city hall in any city, right from this great city of New York, right across to the West Coast, to San Francisco and Los Angeles and the other side of the United States. There is not a city that doesn't have an Irish connection, an Irish voice, an Irish membership. And that has been hugely important for us in the context of our international engagement. And in fact, also here in New York, I was deeply honored to have the opportunity of speaking at a specially arranged function for a great friend of Ireland who served on New York City Council from Queens, Danny Drum. A great friend of Ireland, began his career as a public school teacher and was for many years a New York City council working assiduously on behalf of the people in his constituency, but always prioritizing Ireland and Irish interests. He was involved in many St. Patrick's Day parades. He is really well known as a career community advocate and champion. I was delighted to have the opportunity again here in New York of linking up with Danny, honoring his service, one of hundreds, if not thousands, of Irish-American city councillors and politicians right across the United States.
Absolutely. We couldn't say enough, but I think it's also very significant when we learned from our Consul General Helena Nolan here that was indeed going to be a significant part of your visit here to New York. And anything that anybody can say about Danny Drum indeed wouldn't cover, you know, his stellar career and his commitment to Ireland and to immigrants. And this part of your delegation here is in fact strengthening the not only the awareness but the committee's work program on the diaspora, immigration reform, and Ireland's membership, obviously, in the UN Council. You have always been to the fore in terms of actually being out front with respect to the diaspora, for us particularly in the United States. That is something, it's really something that we must acknowledge and thank you for.
Well, on this short visit, I had the opportunity of visiting the New York Irish Center in Long Island, meeting firsthand the volunteers, the workers there, not only in that center, but also in the adjoining Solace House, the Suicide Prevention Center, which is attached to the New York Irish Center, seeing the great support that has been provided by Rebecca and her team there, support for people in emotional difficulty, providing accessible and professional counseling and support, which is done on a free basis, and again, to have the opportunity of thanking them, and in particular the volunteers for the work that they continue to do, engaging with the Irish community, and also in the Emerald Isle Immigration Centre, which I had the opportunity of visiting before, but meeting the executive director, seeing the legal services people there, being updated on the current state of play on the matter of the undocumented Irish, which of course is a big worry, the prospects for legal migration from Ireland, but hearing firsthand this from people in the centres working on the front line, providing support for vulnerable diaspora groups, and again, linking up with Helena Nolan and her team at the consulate. We were particularly lucky, Adrian, over the years, to have very strong people in our consulate representing the Irish government and Irish people here in New York. And Helena Nolan is very much to the front line when it comes to leading figures from our Department of Foreign Affairs serving in New York. And I saw over the past few days, again, firsthand, the work that Helena and her team does for and on behalf of the Government of Ireland. And I'm quite happy in a report that I will give to the Irish Parliament on my return that the delegation will prepare as soon as we get back to Dublin, that the money that we provide from the Department of Foreign Affairs through the Immigrant Support Group, every dollar of that is well spent here in New York City in our centres. And we will be keen to ensure that the level of funding is not only maintained, but a need to have an increase, particularly having regard to, if you like, the vulnerability of people and communities that we saw during the pandemic. I'd also had the opportunity from a cultural perspective to attend a film in New York, which is something I've never done before, and that is an award-winning Irish film called Young Plato, about a Belfast school, which is, I found it to be quite compelling and quite poignant. It was a screening of that film in the Angelica Film Centre, and again we were lucky that the principal character in the film, a guy called Kevin McAreevy, a teacher from West Belfast, was present in the audience. And I would say to any of your listeners, if they would like to see a very moving film on the situation facing young people in Northern Ireland, young school children in particular, that this award-winning film, Young Plato, the story of a primary school in the Ardoyne area of North Belfast, a place where communities, as you will be aware, are divided by more than 100 peace walls, and a message for us politicians that, you know, while the historic Good Friday Agreement brought peace to Northern Ireland, that there is still much work to be done in the area of conflict resolution, in the area of preventing violence, in the area of ensuring that communities are working together as neighbours and friends as they should be. And the film, understand, it's on Netflix. It's called Young Plato, and it's a great view.
Unfortunately, we're not able to join you for that one, but we are looking forward indeed to seeing it. I just also would like to include your tremendous and the government's tremendous support for the Aisling Irish Centre, which you didn't get a chance on this short trip to visit, though you've been there indeed before. So just to add the great work that they do, and the sense of cooperation, you know, again, between the New York Irish Centre, the Emerald Isle Immigration Centre, Aisling,
Aisling, and you're quite right. Regret the fact that the couple of days we were here didn't allow us to visit the Aisling Centre, but I would hope that we would return, and obviously to acknowledge the importance of that centre and the great work carried out there for and on behalf of the Irish community in the area.
Finally, I'd like to again know that we are encouraging and are encouraged by the fact that despite the common effects of pandemic of COVID, that Ireland, number one, became the first country in Europe to enter the lockdown, to make sure that the safety of Ireland came first, promoting to a great degree the vaccination program, making Ireland the singularly the most vaccinated, for lack of a better term, in all of Europe. And that was taken very seriously, but again, the tourism and those who are really, really have been on edge for the last couple of years now can go to a very welcoming Ireland, one indeed that has whose primary purpose is caution and making sure that you know that visitors to Ireland, it's such a part and so significant for the Irish economy. I know you're on a very tight schedule. I want to thank you for joining us, and I would like you know, our listeners to know that over the 3+ decades of your career as minister, not only have we followed you, not only have you been available to us and our programming here, but along the way we also developed a friendship, one which of course we're very proud of. Charlie, thank you very much for joining us, and hopefully you'll be back again shortly.
A pleasure as always, Adrian, and can I finish as I started in offering my sincere personal congratulations to you that your decades of service in terms of broadcasting here in New York City has been rewarded by your receipt of the highest honour within the Irish state by President Michael D. Higgins, the award being you, being one of a very few persons to have received the President's Distinguished Persons Award. Many congratulations to you, and can I wish you continued success and good health for many years as being the voice of New York. Thank you, Adrian.
And also to you too. Thank you indeed, friends, Minister for Foreign Affairs and Trade, the Irish Government, and also, of course, Chairman of the Oireachtas Joint Committee on Foreign Affairs. You are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, The Flannelly Show, irishradio.com worldwide.